Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Thank you for joining me yet again. Always information to get out there. We have some very big topics to discuss today. Some things that you've likely seen around since yesterday, and something is kind of breaking today. I want to start out by pointing out that I had an amazing interview today with Jordan Sheridan of Status Quo, and about Flint, Michigan, stuff that you might have already likely seen as well. But this was an hour interview, really diving into the corruption that's taking place, the exposing of the fake water tests, the doctored information they used to basically lie to the residents and America about how Flint is now okay, allowing these people to drink tainted water and suffer the consequences. I'll likely have that out tomorrow for you all to watch. It's an incredibly damning interview, but discussing the concept of like media corruption and their willingness to ignore the reality of the situation, ignore what's really going on, and to outright censor and just disregard what the people actually want to see is a big point of today's show, both in regard to Israel, BDS, and the people that are suffering because their desire to speak out about the crimes of Israel and what they're doing to the Palestinian people and take their constitutional rights and take action towards that end, as well as what's going on in Hungary right now with these massive protests around the exact same concept. Started with a terrible law they're calling a slave law, and is now slowly formed into the simple idea that we want a free, independent judiciary and media. This is growing. Things are changing. People are waking up, and it's important that we don't let this get hijacked like everything else. But let's get right into it. The first topic of the day, something that, as many of you know, I have covered for a very long time, not just Israel, but Palestine, what they're doing to them, and the crimes of the Zionist Israeli government. Something that is very important, especially to even domestic policy. The fact that we're sending $10.5 million a day of your taxpayer dollars over to Israel while we're suffering, while Flint is suffering, while all these things are happening. Now, this is a big story that I saw yesterday shared by a lot of different people. And this one, I believe the first place I saw it was on The Intercept. And then it was shared with me in regard to, I think, RTR Media, which did a video about it. I saw it this morning on Mint Press News, which is what I'm reporting on, which is this article entitled "Texas Educator Files Lawsuit After She Was Fired for Refusing to Sign an Oath to Israel." Now, this is a very big deal, and this is a massive story. And if there was any honesty in our mainstream media, this would be reported as a big story because it is a big story. But sadly, and more, you know, as we're beginning to recognize, you will not see this on the mainstream media because of their absolute loyalty to Israel, which is amazing and disgusting and disheartening all at the same time. Now, this story is about a woman who is, because of her ancestry to Palestine and many other things, her morals, refused to sign a pledge that said she would not boycott Israel. Why, you may ask, that is even involved in this? That's a very good question. And we'll get into more about that in a moment. Now, this story is taking place in Texas. Now, she's a Texas speech pathologist, and she's filed a lawsuit against the state of Texas specifically after she was reportedly fired for refusing to sign an oath that of course, she would not boycott the apartheid state of Israel, which is her complete right as an American citizen. Now, she is a U.S. citizen born in Austria, however, and of Palestinian descent. Her name is Baya Amawi, I believe. I might be mispronouncing her name. I apologize if I did. And in a speech, and as I said, she's a speech specialist in Western Texas, who works specifically with autistic and developmentally disabled people, which is commendable. You know, clearly this is a good person who cares about people. Now, I guess that's subjective and that's my opinion, but I would say simply by the job that she's carrying out, that seems apparent, but, you know, decide for yourself. Now, the educator charges that the district refused to renew her contract in August after she declined to sign paperwork pledging that she does not and will not participate in any kind of boycott or otherwise take any action that is intended to inflict economic harm, that's a quote, against the Israeli state. Now, you could argue maybe, oh, there's more to the story. That's not why she was fired. But let's just say that's the case. The larger question should be, why are they being forced to sign anything that says that they will not do something outside. It has nothing to do with their job. They're literally forcing these people to sign something that says not that they won't speak ill of Jewish people or that they will not even, you know, speak ill of Israel. It's something that will intended to inflict economic harm against the state of Israel. That is a political standpoint. This is wildly unconstitutional. Yes, I said wildly, and I love people don't like my adverbs, but it is wildly unconstitutional. And this is something that goes to the root of all the things we're talking about today. And it shows you the deep, deep connection to Israel that our political system has. And that should be alarming to all of us. Now, a lawsuit was filed in federal court on Amawi's behalf this week, alleging that the district's refusal to renew her contract is a direct violation of her First Amendment rights, because it is. And as a U.S. citizen, of course, Amawi, who worked for the PFLUGERville Independent School District. A very odd name. Maybe it's a typo for all I know. As a contractor for nearly 10 years. She says her renewal contract contained a special document in August asking her to take an oath that she would not boycott or inflict economic harm against Israel in any way. Now, the author points out that this may constitute the first direct challenge to new legislation aimed at curbing support for the growing boycott, divest, and sanctions movement, the BDS movement, in the United States, which is a growing movement, which ultimately aims to end apartheid in Palestinian and in Israeli territories, or what's considered Palestine, if you're not lying to yourself. Occupied Palestine. They try to pass BDS off as some kind of terrorist organization, but no, it's ultimately, I mean, they're likely fringes of any movement, but the reality is it's rooted in the simple concept that we should be not supporting Israel while they are murdering Palestinians. Pretty simple. Now, Texas became, of course, the 20th state of what are now 26, apparently, to pass anti-BDS legislation. 26 states in this country passing legislation that says you're not allowed to protest something. Let that sink in. And this does infringe on our free speech by banning U.S. citizens from participating in boycotts against Israel's apartheid state, as well as just boycotting anything that you may choose. This is such as refusing to renew a teacher's contract. Now, 13 additional states have similar legislation that's currently pending. This is something that we should not be okay with. Something, even if you think she was fired for other reasons, the fact that any school would force, or anything, any group would force their employees to sign something that says that they will not exercise their First Amendment rights. That's as simple as it gets. Take Israel out of the equation. This is unbelievably unconstitutional. Now, this is, of course, a huge problem that has been building for a very long time, that many have been pointing out for a very long time. And of course, most of our corrupted politicians who are being paid by these same pro-Israel lobbyist firms that are getting these laws passed, you know, pretend that it's not happening. And of course, any discussion such as this is deemed anti-Semitic. And a perfect example of this exact kind of thing from a while back that I reported on at the time, that I've seen other people reference after talking about this, is of course during Hurricane Harvey, where people that were suffering were denied insurance and support after the hurricane, unless they promised not to boycott Israel. Now, if you doubt for a moment that that's true, I'm saying that can't be right. Somebody must be misunderstanding this here. Well, here's the ACLU. Texas City tells people no Hurricane Harvey aid unless they promise not to boycott Israel. You may be asking, how are they even connected? Well, guess what? They're not. This is just exerting pressure on people in a very, very vulnerable moment to support a political movement that is suppressing your free speech, your constitutional rights. It's very simple. You know, kind of as unrelated as putting in legislation about Yemen into a farm bill. This is how our politics function in this country. They are manipulating you. And it's quite simple. And this is something we need to continue to talk about, regardless of the pressure they try to exert over us. That what Israel's doing in Palestine is unacceptable. Unacceptable. And they're trying to silence you from being able to even discuss the topic. And this is very relevant to everything that we're talking about today. Now, in an incredibly related story,
coming from Mint Press News as well, entitled U.S. Funds to Pay Palestinians to Vacate the West Bank. Israeli lobby group has a plan. Exactly what we're talking about. These same lobbyist groups that are exerting their pressure politically and financially over the politicians that they have in their pocket to basically start to use taxpayer dollars to fund their ethnic cleansing. This is what we're looking at here. This is also a very big story. Now, it's a relatively unknown pro-Israel lobbying organization in the United States that's doing this. This actually has very close ties to Vice President Mike Pence. Big surprise. And they've been lobbying very high-ranking members of Congress and the White House to support a plan that has been likened to U.S.-funded ethnic cleansing plan in Palestine. They may be asking, you know, how are they, if it's such an unknown group, how are they getting such tight connections with these high-ranking political members in the United States? Well, that's a good question, and we're going to get to that. Now, the highly controversial legislation would use U.S. taxpayers' dollars, your money, to pay Palestinians in the West Bank to move away, basically bribing them to say, leave your own country so we can continue to occupy your country. This is what we're talking about. Now, the Alliance for Israel Advocacy, the name of this lobbying group, actually employs Fidelis Government Relations, a lobbying firm that currently employs one of Pence's closest aides, one of Mike Pence's, the vice president, one of his closest aides and his former chief of staff, Bill Smith. Now, according to public records cited by The Intercept, the lobbying group AIA, Alliance for Israel Advocacy, hired the firm in order to build relationships specifically with the White House and the vice president's office. So this unknown group, an unknown lobbying group, hires a lobbying group to be able to connect with the White House. Does that seem odd to you? It should. Whether they're trying to distance themselves from a clear connection to what they're doing, it's obvious. It's odd in general that a lobbying group would hire a lobbying group to do what they're trying to do. There's something going on here, and they're directly connected as an unknown group to the White House and to Mike Pence. Now, if AIA's efforts go as planned, the legislation will be introduced when the next Congress convenes that would aim specifically to redirect U.S. funding formerly dedicated to the UN Relief and Works Agency Fund, the UNRWA, in Palestine, to a fund managed, guess who, by the Israeli government. So again, your taxpayer dollars are being redirected into a fund managed directly by Israel that would offer West Bank families vouchers. So mind you, not even here's money to leave. Here's a voucher. Here's an Israeli-backed voucher that would give them cash eventually to resettle abroad. I have a sneaking suspicion it won't work out that well for them. Now, as The Intercept noted, the plan, quote, is a bid to reshape the ethnic and religious population of territories controlled by Israel. You know, Palestine, occupied Palestine, currently occupied by Israel. So essentially, U.S. taxpayer dollars are footing the bill for ethnic cleansing in Palestine. It's quite simple. They may try the semantics of it all. They might tell you this so that you're misrepresenting this. No, this is exactly what we're talking about. They're looking to change the ethnic field of Palestine, forcing Palestinians to leave so it can become occupied Israel. Officially, everywhere, which is something, mind you, that the U.S. has pretended is not the case. That Israel has been openly trying to annex these areas and really just force these people out. Now, Paul Lieberman, the executive director of the Alliance for Israel Advocacy, a Messianic Jew whose pro-Israel position is based on his interpretation of the Bible, and I would add his misinterpretation of it, maybe even willfully so, as I pointed out in past shows, described the proposed legislation to The Intercept as follows, quote, our organization advocates, and it's in our purposed legislation, we say, let's offer sponsorship if there are any Palestinian residents who wish to leave and go to other countries. We will provide funds for you to leave. The only rights the Palestinians have are squatters' rights. If there are any Palestinian residents who wish to leave, we will provide funds for you to leave. Or vouchers, more likely, as he said. And he goes on to say, with the hopes to change the demography of the West Bank towards an eventual annexation. Point blank. Now, that in and of itself is something the U.S. has roundly denied. But saying that they only have squatters' rights is one to say that Palestine never existed, which is a fundamental, it's a lie. This is a simple historical fact. that they're trying to rewrite history, but the fact that they don't even belong where they are now. It's unbelievable to think that the premise they're putting forward, and then they're passing laws to allow you to not even discuss this kind of stuff. Really think about that. Now, the article finishes by saying, since coming into office, Trump has taken a markedly pro-Israel stance that has resulted in his being called the most pro-Israel president in U.S. history, which is a simple fact. Now, this is not only the result of the fact that Trump has long shared close personal ties to Zionists, such as his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his longtime personal attorney and now current U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, but also due to the policy demands of his top donor, Zionist billionaire Sheldon Adelson. Adelson, now the top donor of both Trump and the Republican Party in general, as we reported on recently, actually helped orchestrate many of Trump's pro-Israel policies, as lobbyists and donors all too often do, which is the entire point of how our corrupt bribery lobbyist donor system works in this country. This is including the U.S. Embassy move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Trump's unilateral withdrawal from the Iran deal, as we connected directly to Netanyahu and his desires there, Trump's decision to stop funding the UNRWA, and the hiring of pro-Israel stalwart John Bolton to be the new national security advisor earlier this year. Now, if the AIA's, the lobbyist group's legislation, is introduced next year and Adelson throws his support behind the plan, his strong connections to Trump and the Republican Party could and likely will result in the piece becoming law. Which we've seen many times, especially given the fact that most Democratic lawmakers are also just as pro-Israel as their Republican counterparts. Now, this is a very scary thing we're talking about here. We're literally talking about the hijacking, or already been hijacked, our entire system of government by a foreign nation. Talking about Russian scare tactics and Russian meddling and Russian all this nonsense. It's more than obvious it's happening with Israel right in front of our face. It should be alarming to all of us. And that's not anti-Semitic. We're talking about a political hijacking of our country. And they want to claim they want to just say that I'm not even allowed to talk about this subject. That's why they're having people sign petitions. People that are struggling after a hurricane. Here, sign this petition that says you won't talk about Israel. If that's not obvious, I don't know what is. Hopefully that gets through to some people. Now let's shift into the big story, the one talking about Hungary today that, again, is tied in with all of this. The media not representing the people, hiding the information, and their politicians representing something else. I'm sure there's different opinions about what that is, but it's certainly not you and I, you and me. So this is the big story because it's something that's growing in the country or in the world today. It is really beginning to grow, and it's not just yellow vests or it's part of it, but it's something bigger than that. People are beginning to question the system. And they're not having it anymore. And the media and the politicians are doing everything they can to keep this from the view of the world because they're losing control. Now, this article coming from France 24, which is entitled Hungary State TV Hit as Slave Labor Law Protests Continue. And this is something I first actually saw from Nathan's coverage today, which I'll reference in a moment. But this is a very big story. Thank you for the super chat, M99. I appreciate your support. And indeed, this story relates to everything we're talking about. Now, this new slave law, as they're rightfully calling it, can essentially demand that employees work 400 hours between, I think, 300 to 400 hours of overtime a year, and that they can actually withhold payments of that overtime work for up to 3 years, which is unbelievable. They claim this is, of course, to combat unemployment. And Hungary and state media refuses to talk about it. And MPs were apparently physically thrown from the building of one TV network. And all they wanted was to read off a petition in regard to these new labor laws. And apparently a third member of parliament, MP, was taken to the hospital yesterday after another altercation with security at the very same building. We're talking about members of parliament. These are politicians that are saying, no, we want to speak about this. And the media is refusing to allow, physically removing them from the building, which is a little crazy. Now, the people with the backing of these members of parliament are now demanding what they want, non-government funded news. Kind of like the way the gas tax in France merged into a larger thing, so is this. They claim that Hungarian state television has become a government mouthpiece. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Does it sound like what we're dealing with? Does it sound like what France is dealing with? Does it sound like what all these countries are dealing with? Aggressive propaganda presented to you as news. Just like the Smith Modernization Act in this country made that okay. They can straight up lie to you for national security, of course. Now, they're point blank, as Nathan put it, demanding an independent judiciary and an independent public media. As if it's as easy just to ask for it and receive it, but the point is they're recognizing the problem here. Now, we're seeing tens of thousands of protesters gathering in protest to this law. And the more so, it would seem now, the media's willingness to ignore what's most important to the people. As the article from France 24 notes, the rallies were the latest in a wave of protests that have seen opposition parties join forces with Prime Minister Obron's nationalist government. A fierce nationalist, Obron, Prime Minister, has riled his EU opponents and domestic critics through a tough anti-immigration stance and populist rhetoric. Also sounds vaguely familiar. Now, demonstrators have clashed with police over the law, which they say undermines workers' rights. That's a nice way of saying that. Much more than that, I would say. Now, the opposition petition also demanded the annulment of another controversial law, adopted on the very same day, which paves the way for new, quote, administrative courts to oversee cases concerning matters such as public procurements and electoral disputes. Justice Minister Laszlo Trukhanziani, very odd name. I'm not even going to pretend to know how to pronounce it. A close Obron ally, will oversee the courts. Now think about what that means. And this prompted the opposition warnings that the premier could have basically near total political influence over the judicial system. And again, as Nathan pointed out in his excellent coverage this morning, this is essentially setting up a parallel justice system that specifically handles things involving politicians or taxation. And of course, the judges involved in this parallel system are appointed by, you know, those in charge. Gee, I wonder how that will work out. Now, it's important to note here that this is related to all the things that we're seeing here, not directly necessarily, but that people are waking up. The yellow vest protests were a big, that took a lot of notice there. The people are truly beginning to change their opinion and recognize how they're being misled. And the media, the elite run media, and their politicians are desperately trying to push forward this narrative that these are the crazy fringe, out lunatics out there. But in reality, it seems like this is the popular movement. People are beginning to see how we're being lied to, that the mainstream media is failing, and they're scared about it. Now, here's one image that I saw that does show that even in this protest in Hungary, that there's even the occasional scattered yellow vest. So there maybe even is some slight connection there. But even if it's not, even if there is no connection, the point is that people are beginning to wake up to what's going on around them. And they're doing everything they can, including creating new ways to draw you back in. New Russiagates and new QAnons and new things to draw you right back into the same broken system with faith for the new thing, the new bill, the new president. When in fact, it's all going in the very same direction. So we need to be careful we don't allow that to happen. Now, again, if you want any more information on this coverage, Nathan did a really good job this morning of breaking this down. This is where I first saw it. The link to his video will be in the show notes, where he goes over a bunch of different articles and the information around this. Did an excellent job here. And this was a great video, and I highly recommend you check it out. But interestingly enough, there's one aspect here, however, that I did not see anyone include. Something that I often point out. And it's often just under the surface of any event like this. And that is, of course, the involvement, past and present, of the United States and their regime change and interventionist mechanisms. Big shock, right? Oh my gosh, I can't believe that somehow the United States is involved in this. Well, speaking of that, is an article from Global Research, actually, I believe originally by the Ron Paul Institute, entitled Manipulation: Washington's new program to take on Hungarian media. Regime change in Budapest? You don't say. You don't say that there's a connection to the Western propaganda regime change interventionist machine. I would have never called that. And I doubt you guys are surprised by that either. But of course, it's a very important thing to recognize. Now, back from November 10th, 2017, Daniel McAdams writes, "Hypocrisy may be the only consistent guiding principle of U.S. foreign policy. Here's a prime example of the do as we say, not as we do, that is the core of how Washington does business overseas. In the same week that the U.S. Justice Department demanded that the Russian-backed RT, American Network, register as a foreign propaganda entity, or face arrest, mind you, the U.S. State Department's Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, the DNL, has announced that it is launching a program to massively interfere in NATO partner Hungary's internal media." Thank you for the super chat. I appreciate that, Christopher. Now, think about this in context of what we're talking about here. We're talking about the people revolting against a media that refuses to address their problems and a political structure, knowing that Oberon himself was a clear supporter of Donald Trump. And now we're talking, we're looking back not even a year, and we can see that the DNL launched a program to interfere specifically with Hungary's internal media. Coincidence? Probably not. So the U.S. Justice Department is cracking down, or did, on RT for what it said was manipulation of U.S. domestic affairs, while at the same time the U.S. State Department announced a new program to manipulate Hungary's domestic affairs. That's pretty status quo. This is how it works. This is foreign policy 101 for the United States. Now, Washington's Hungarian media project is clearly meant to interfere in that country's domestic political environment. This is a U.S. government program that's used to ensure that the Hungarian media follows Washington's political policy line. And there's no way in my mind that this is not directly connected to what we're seeing take place. Maybe because the media there is not caring about what Hungarians actually want, but instead following the line, walking the line of Washington's policies. Think about that. And this is not a secret. We're talking about the DNL or any number of these groups that go in, like the National Endowment for Democracy, under the guise of helping people, and instead forcefully carry out regime change efforts. As they've even said themselves in the NED, they do now what the CIA used to do clandestinely, however you would say that, secretly. The CIA used to secretly carry out coups, and now the NED does that open, right? We're talking about these groups that are now there to control the media of Hungary. And now we're seeing the people stand up and say, we demand a free media. Things are changing all around us. And it's not just the United States. The West and Israel and Saudi Arabia and all these people are involved here. But this is an effort, a powered effort to shift your attention away from what really matters and put propaganda in front of you in hopes that you just become docile and ignore what's really going on around you. But guess what? The people are not having it. The Yellow Vests, the Hungary protests, in the United States, hopefully we can see something happen. That people can finally disconnect from this ridiculous left-right paradigm and recognize what's really happening right in front of them, and that their friends around the world are beginning to see the same thing. It's time that we did here too. Now, on a unrelated note that I wanted to touch on before I move to the last story, which is some domestic policy news, which I found very interesting in regard to Trump, is just a quick follow-up in regard to Yemen. There's an article that came out because today, supposedly, they're supposed to, you know, the ceasefire is supposed to take place today, as it was supposed to after the 30 days that Mattis gave them, and it didn't. An article written by Mint Press News entitled, "Before the Ink Could Dry, Saudis Violate Yemen Truce with Fierce Attacks on Hodeidah." Shouldn't really be shocking to us all. We've been talking about this repeatedly, that they don't care about the peace talks. And all throughout the supposed Sweden peace talks, Yemen was being bombed by Saudi Arabia. But the reason I wanted to point this out quickly is just because of what they said in the article, that Saudi Arabia has violated the Hodeidah ceasefire at least 50 times since just Thursday, when the truce was agreed upon. So after they shook hands and said, yes, ceasefire, 50 times they violated that agreement already, launching 50 airstrikes, as they write, as the ink on the deal was still drying. As I said in a recent comment that I thought was important to include, it does not bode well for the peace talks, you know, the peace talks, when one side of those talks is bombing everything it can while the talks are underway. And even if they plan to adhere to the deadline of today, which their past has made utterly clear that is highly unlikely, It also doesn't bode well that one side of the talks is getting in every last attack until the last moment. Clearly, they don't care about this. And so I am just waiting to hear back from Hussein al-Bukhadi to let me know, sorry, Ryan, they're still bombing in Hodeida. Which I've been reaching out to him in hopes that he can send me something to show us. And really, I hope that it ends. Of course, I hope that this ends and it actually works. But I doubt it. Because of what they've already shown us and the malicious and sinister way they've carried this out from the beginning. So if and when I hear from him, I will be sure to report it to you. But as last I heard, the bombings were taking place right up until this moment. And today is the day they swore, the UN swore, Antonio Guterres said, oh, the immediate ceasefire was actually for Tuesday, not very immediate, which is today. So we'll wait and see. And moving on to the final story of the day, coming from Zero Hedge, something that I thought was very important, that shows you the absurd nature of our media specifically. This is kind of the overarching point of today, but also the political scene here, especially talking about the Clinton whistleblower hearings that we talked about that they just seemingly ignored. This entitled, Trump Foundation Agrees to Dissolve Amid a Shocking Pattern of Illegality. How interesting, how coincidental. Now, of course, President Trump's charity, the Donald J. Trump Foundation, has been reported all over today, has agreed to dissolve amid allegations from the New York Attorney General's office that it engaged in a shocking pattern of illegality, which I don't even doubt. I would argue that Donald Trump and his foundation or the Clintons or anyone in politics today in our country is likely just as guilty should they be thrown under the bus for some reason. Now, however, the New York Attorney General, Barbara Underwood, announced on Tuesday that her office will continue to pursue its lawsuit against the foundation, even though he's dissolved it. As according to the Washington Post, the Attorney General's suit alleges that Trump used his charity's money as his own piggy bank. This is an article from today. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Yeah, it sounds just like what they reported about the Clinton Foundation and has been reported for a decade. So it's just funny that they're shifting the attention to Trump, which again, I would argue he's probably just as guilty. But it's just very revealing that I would argue it's not about left or right. It's about shifting the attention away from the real power structure operating behind the scenes and the Clintons' connection to that. Not even arguing that it's them, but their clear connection to that. And that's why the Russiagate and all this stuff is designed to keep us focused on Trump while the real problem is existing all around us still. Using money as his own piggy bank. That's literally the same thing they said in the hearing about the Clinton Foundation. Now, this is, of course, including the help the president's campaign with the due to the paying and giving away of their money to these different connections to these rallies and all these different things they're talking about in this article. I mean, I honestly don't recommend you even read the WAPO article. As you know, if you want to, the link will be there, but the reality of the way that they try to sway these things. And I would argue as unbelievable as it is that it connects directly to the concept of the Clintons, as relevant as that is, as it just happened, you won't even see a mention of that in the article. And they go on to say, quote, the foundation was little more than a checkbook for payments to not-for-profits for Mr. Trump or the Trump Organization. Again, it's like the exact same thing we're hearing. Now, the Trump Foundation was never the most impressive part of his portfolio anyway, which I find very kind of humorous that this is what they're focusing on, as apparently its peak in 2009, it had only about $3.2 million in the bank. I mean, we're talking about the Clinton story was $900 million in regard to just one aspect of their foundation. So you see the difference there and why one story seems a lot bigger and why they're not covering it. Now, of course, the article ends by sarcastically saying, oh, we're sure the probe of the Clinton Foundation will be along shortly, which is the point that this is a redirect. They're not doing their job of showing you the whole story, which is what they're there for. Actually, I would say maybe they are doing their job, which is to keep you focused on one aspect of an entire story. Now, all of this stuff today, and I feel like very interestingly relates entirely to the interview I just had with Jordan Sheraton about Flint, about the media's willingness to mislead you. And how interesting is that Hungary is protesting against the seemingly US-backed manipulation of their media to mislead them. And how the French are protesting against the fact that they're being run by bankers and their entire institution is corrupt. All of this shows us that things are certainly changing all around us. And it is certainly damn time that we rose up as well. Now, I certainly hope you enjoyed this show today. There's a lot of good stuff to talk about. Make sure you stay tuned. I'm going to be doing a T-Lab R&R, kind of a Q&A after this to further address these topics and a couple other things. And if you want to support this channel, as always, there's a lot of different ways you can, because it's an important thing to do today, not just me necessarily, but your independent media. Because right now, it's frustrating to see people continue to argue, you know, they're simply looking for support from people today, while we're trying to combat the unbelievably behemoth propaganda machine with unlimited funding, is somehow wrong. So if you want to support this channel, you can do so on Patreon, or as I completely understand for those of you that are drifting away from that platform, as we're likely looking to as well with some other alternatives, you can check us out on PayPal, or even you can buy one of our t-shirts. Let's see. Oh, it looks like the image was gone anyway. From truthclothing.io/collections/TLab. Link is in the show notes. A question everything t-shirt such as this if you just want to support the channel. Because it's about supporting what we can actually change today. We can see that the media, where all your tax dollars and subsidizations go to these groups that are lying to you, it's important that you find ways to support the people that are actually trying to inform you. Be that the Last American Vagabond or the anti-media or any group out there that is trying to show you the light. So take a stance, take a change, do something today. Stand up and say something to people that are blinded to it. Remember to tune in for T-Lab Research and Review coming up right away. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.